The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome on Lunchtime, Doctor. Dr. Brittany Dean.
Good afternoon, Bez, and good afternoon to all our listeners out there. We have another interesting show today. So, you know, while we are going to be talking about a specific topic, feel free to call in and send us your questions on any of your medical topics, and we can have a conversation about them.
And of course, also your numbers to call when we do open up the phone lines for any of your medical questions are 625-2257, 627-3223, and WhatsApp us. You could even WhatsApp us from now at 306-1065. You welcome any of your medical questions, right, when we take. But today, our topic I see would be pneumonia.
Yes. So today's topic is going to be pneumonia. So we've talked about the flu and the common cold, but we haven't really talked about pneumonia. And a lot of people tend to think that they are synonymous. But today we're going to learn that pneumonia is actually something different to the flu and to the common cold. So we're going to learn about all the symptoms, the risk factors, and of course the management that is involved in treating somebody with pneumonia.
All right, so first question, what exactly is pneumonia and how does it affect the lungs?
So when we think about pneumonia, the first thing that really comes to mind for a lot of people is a chest infection. And yes, that is true to an extent, but pneumonia is actually a very serious infection or an inflammation of the lungs. And it really affects what we call the alveoli. Now, the alveoli are these tiny sacs in the lungs that are responsible for oxygen exchange. In a person who is very healthy, in their lungs, those little sacs or those air sacs, as we call them, they actually fill with air when we breathe, and that allows oxygen to pass into our bloodstream. Now, in pneumonia, the alveoli or these air sacs, they actually become filled with fluid or pus, and that can lead to difficulty in that person breathing. And of course, if they're not getting enough oxygen in their lungs, then they have a reduced amount of oxygen levels in the blood as well. And that is going to lead to a variety of different symptoms, which we will discuss later on. Now, the important thing to note is that pneumonia can affect one lung, and that's when we call it unilateral pneumonia, or it can even affect both lungs, so bilateral pneumonia. And of course, its severity is going to range from mild to life-threatening, depending on the person, depending on their risk factors, and of course, depending on their immunity. Now, pneumonia can be caused by a variety of different things. It can be either a bacteria or a virus or even a fungus or even aspirating a foreign material into the lungs. Now, the body's immune response is naturally to have inflammation. These sort of pathogens or these foreign substances to die or be expelled from the body. But when inflammation occurs, that is going to lead to swelling and fluid accumulation in the lungs. And that process is going to make it much harder for oxygen to reach the vital organs. And that is why when we have very severe cases, that is going to require hospitalization and even supplemental oxygen therapy. Because if pneumonia is left untreated, it can actually result in many different complications like lung abscesses or even respiratory failure or sepsis for some people, which can lead to death.
All right, pneumonia. A lot of times we hear people, you know, start to get the virus and they get pneumonia and die. So this is some good information. What are the different types of pneumonia and what causes them? Example, bacterial, viral, fungal, or aspiration pneumonia.
So pneumonia can actually be classified into different types based on the different causes and, of course, how exactly it was acquired. So the most common types would be bacterial pneumonia, and that is caused by certain bacteria. And bacterial pneumonia is something that we will usually see following a cold or a flu. And it usually gets worsening with a high fever. The persons get a productive cough, meaning that they will be coughing up the sputum, and they may even have difficulty breathing as well. So remember when we talked about somebody having a flu, an influenza, and that can't be treated by antibiotics. But if it becomes superimposed with a bacterial infection, like bacterial pneumonia, that is the case where we will actually give a person antibiotics. So bacterial pneumonia, like we're seeing here, can follow a cold or the influenza virus if the person does not have proper immunity, or if they did not treat themselves appropriately. Now, viral pneumonia is something that is different from bacterial pneumonia. Viral pneumonia is going to be caused by influenza or the respiratory syncytial virus. And viral pneumonia is actually a little bit milder, but it can also weaken the immune system, and that can also lead to secondary bacterial infections as well. And then we have fungal pneumonia. So that is actually more commonly seen in individuals who have a weakened immune system. So persons who are on immunosuppressive therapy, persons who have cancer, persons who have HIV, and you know, the last one that we would really see would be something called aspiration pneumonia. And that is going to occur when substances like foods or liquids or even vomit or foreign material enters the lungs instead of being swallowed into the esophagus. And that is going to be more typical. Intoxication. So pneumonia can be classified based on how it's caused, like we're seeing the bacterial or the viral or the fungal or the aspiration. But the other way that it's also classified is based on how it is acquired. So community acquired pneumonia means that basically somebody within your circle or your group or somebody within the community has some sort of pneumonia, and that is how you have acquired it. And then there are other types of pneumonia, like hospital-acquired pneumonia. So a person has actually been warded for quite some time, and after a certain period, they may have been warded for something related to a chest condition, but they have ended up acquiring pneumonia while being warded. So we call that hospital-acquired pneumonia. And that type of pneumonia actually tends to be a little more resistant to antibiotics. And of course, there is something called ventilator-associated pneumonia, which we would usually see in persons who are on ventilators or persons or patients in the ICU. So like we're seeing here, pneumonia can be classified based on how it is contracted or based on how it is caused.
All right, folks, you listen to the Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Amco Healthify. And Doctor, at times, we seem to be having a little internet issue. I don't know if it's my end or your end, but you're kind of going in and out at times. So, all right, so who is most at risk for developing pneumonia? Are certain groups more vulnerable?
So there are certain groups that we look at that are at a higher risk to develop pneumonia because they may have a weakened immune system, or they may have underlying conditions, or even age-related factors. So when we're looking at the highest risk groups, we would look at firstly the infants and the young children. Their immune systems are still developing, and that makes them a lot more susceptible to severe infections. So if an infant is born prematurely, or even if they've had malnutrition, that actually further increases their risk of developing pneumonia because, again, their immune system is not yet fully developed. Now, in the elderly population, their immune system is going to naturally get weaker with age. And even conditions that may be underlying, things like chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder or disease or COPD, heart disease and diabetes, that makes older adults more prone to pneumonia as well. And additionally, they actually have weakened cough reflexes, and that can lead them to getting that aspiration pneumonia where, you know, any sort of substance that they're consuming does not go down the esophagus, but instead goes down the trachea into the lungs and causes irritation. And then we look at people with chronic illnesses, people with diabetes or asthma or kidney disease and even cancer. They have compromised immune defenses, and that makes them more likely to develop pneumonia. And of course, smokers and alcoholics. Smoking damages the lungs' natural defenses, and that makes it easier for bacteria and viruses to invade a person's lungs. And if you have excessive alcohol use, that is also going to impair your immune function and also increases your risk of developing aspiration pneumonia. And well, hospitalized or ventilated patients, the people that are on the ventilators or those who have undergone surgeries, they are at a higher risk of hospital-acquired pneumonia, which, again, it's more often difficult to treat because of antibiotic resistance. So there are certain preventative measures such as vaccination and proper hygiene and, of course, avoiding smoking and the excessive alcohol use, which are going to be essential for protecting these high-risk groups.
All right, let's take one more question before we go to our phone lines and open up our phone lines and the WhatsApps. What are the common signs and symptoms of pneumonia?
So pneumonia symptoms are going to vary depending on the cause and the severity of the infection. But often the most common things that we will see would be fever and chills, which we would usually see in bacterial pneumonia, and a persistent cough, which may produce green or yellow or even bloody mucus in some cases, shortness of breath or rapid breathing, chest pain that gets worse with deep breathing or coughing, fatigue, weakness, and even loss of appetite. And some people may have sweaty and clammy skin as well. Many people tend to mistake pneumonia for the flu or the common cold, but there are key differences that help us distinguish them. So usually when somebody has a cold, they're going to have a runny nose or a sore throat or even a mild fever. And of course, the flu itself is going to lead to more symptoms like the muscle aches and even the high fever and the fatigue. But pneumonia, however, that actually causes severe breathing difficulties and even persistent chest pain. Additionally, the flu symptoms will generally improve 5 to 7 days, but pneumonia is something that can get worse if it is left untreated. So if your symptoms last longer than a week, if they become worse, and if you have difficulty breathing, then it is essential that you go and get yourself checked out, you get yourself some medical attention so you can get the appropriate management for what you are experiencing.
All right, let's take some calls at 625-2257, 627-3223. Hello, good. What's that one there? Call us back. Right, hello, good afternoon.
My blessed doctor. Big boy. So, Doc, when we were small, right, our parents said, play in the hot sun. Listen good. In the hot sun you play, and then I want to bathe one time. That was unknown. They say we'll get pneumonia. Is that true? And if you drink hot things, I'm going to be too. I think it's our similarity, you know. Dr. Lutz, you're going to learn something today. Thanks.
So I didn't really catch the entire thing, but I heard if somebody's playing in the sun.
Yeah, you were saying when you're young, your parents will tell you if you're playing in the sun and then you're going on bed, or if you drink hot drinks and then, you know, you're going cold. Like the sudden change, the drastic change in temperature.
So, I mean, the drastic changes in temperature in the body can have some sort of effect or shocking effect to the body. And in some people, it can weaken the immune system. But, I mean, once the temperature change is not extremely drastic, for example, extremely hot to extremely cold, you know, most people tend to be fine. So, I mean, we've heard a lot of things growing up, but really and truly, there aren't much, you know, there isn't much evidence to say that it is going to make you get a cold or it is the reason for you getting sick, etc. The underlying reason would be that the person's immune system is probably not as robust as it needs to be.
And another question coming in here. Doctor, sometimes I feel a twitch on the right side of my face from time to time. Is this a serious issue?
So it depends on if it is associated with other symptoms as well. So are you having difficulty breathing? Are you having difficulty speaking or chewing? But if you are not getting any other additional symptoms, sometimes that twitch on the face can be due to fatigue or even stress, you know, things like lack of sleep or high stress levels or even anxiety, that can trigger muscle twitches, including on your face as well. Are you drinking a lot of coffee? That can give you a stimulant overdose or overuse, even if you have excessive coffee or nicotine or even certain medications can overstimulate your nerves. And sometimes it could just be that you have some sort of electrolyte imbalance or dehydration. So if you have low levels of, I think it is calcium, magnesium, and even potassium, that can lead to muscle spasms. So, I mean, once it is not associated with other symptoms, it's not something to be very concerned about. But if you have sudden weakness or paralysis of that one side of your face and you find that that one side of your face tends to be drooping, then that is a cause for concern. Then we're going into a territory where we're looking at your nerve, and that could be Bell's palsy or a hemifacial spasm. So there are nerve-related conditions that can lead to that. But if there are no other associated symptoms, it could just be something benign.
All right, let's take this call. Thank you for holding. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bates.
Afternoon, sir.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. I had pneumonia in 2019. So I wanted to know if I could get it again.
Yes. If you've had pneumonia before, it does not, unfortunately, provide you some sort of immunity to not get it again. So if your immune system becomes compromised, or if you have contracted, say, Streptococcus pneumoniae, which is the bacteria that is most commonly responsible for bacterial pneumonia, yes, unfortunately, you can get pneumonia again.
All right, folks, keep sending in your questions at 625-206-1065, and we take some more of your calls later on. Let's take a word from our sponsor, Amco Healthify, and we'll come back with your lunchtime doctor.
Life moves fast, so healthify yourself every day, starting with naturally brand almond milk and all-inclusive cereal. Quick, plant-based fuel for your morning. Healthify lunch with Bragg's apple cider vinegar, adding a splash of goodness to salads, and Bragg's liquid aminos for stir-fries. Tetley and Caribbean Dreams range of tea help you relax, recharge, and healthify your afternoons. And after your workout, refuel with naturally ground almond milk and all-inclusive for a protein-packed recovery. Amco gives you so many ways to healthify your day with naturally ground almond milk, Bragg's apple cider vinegar, liquid aminos, and refreshers. All-inclusive cereals, Tetley and Caribbean Dreams teas.
Okay, we're back, folks, with your lunchtime doctor and your questions. Of course, our topic, pneumonia. Right, how can someone tell if they have it versus a common cold or flu?
Some of the symptoms are going to overlap, right? But in terms of pneumonia, pneumonia is more of a serious lung condition or a serious inflammation of the lungs themselves. So in terms of a common cold or flu, that is usually self-limiting. So after about 5 to 7 days, the symptoms that you are going to get from the cold or the flu, they are usually going to subside. But with pneumonia, if it is left untreated, it usually becomes worse. So especially after a week of having those flu-like symptoms. And in addition to that, if you have difficulty breathing, that is a red flag to say, okay, something is going on in your lower respiratory tract. And that means that you have to go and get yourself looked at and properly diagnosed. In terms of pneumonia, again, you may get the sputum that is of a yellowish color or even green or even bloody mucus spitting up, depending on the type of pneumonia that you have. You may get the shortness of breath and even the chest pain as well. These are things that you will not really get with a common cold or with the flu.
And what are the most common bacteria and viruses that cause pneumonia?
So, in terms of bacterial causes, there's something called Streptococcus pneumoniae that is actually responsible, or the most common bacteria that is responsible for what we call pneumococcal pneumoniae. And there are other bacterial pathogens that we look at as well. There's Legionella, and that is known for what we call Legionnaires' disease. And that is a severe form of pneumonia that is often linked to contaminated water systems. Now, when we're looking at the viral causes, influenza viruses are actually the most common. So yes, you can have the influenza virus that causes an upper respiratory tract infection. So you can just have the mild symptoms, but sometimes that can lead to viral pneumonia, which is a lower respiratory tract infection that affects the lungs as well. So influenza viruses are the most common that leads to viral pneumonia, particularly when we are looking at this flu season now. And then we have the respiratory syncytial virus that is actually a major cause in infants. And of course, the most famous one that we all know now that has caused severe viral pneumonia worldwide, COVID-19. And unlike the bacterial pneumonia, the viral pneumonia often sort of resolves on its own, but it can also predispose individuals to those secondary bacterial infections. And that is when persons will start to require the antibiotic treatment.
And can pneumonia be contagious? If so, how is it spread?
Yes, there are some types of pneumonia that are contagious, but of course there are others that are not as well. Bacterial and viral pneumonia, that can spread from person to person through the respiratory when an infected person either coughs or sneezes or even talks. And these droplets, they can be inhaled by other people, and that leads to infection, especially if you are in a crowded area like a school or hospital or even a nursing home. However, when we're talking about the fungal pneumonia and the aspiration pneumonia, those are actually not contagious. So fungal pneumonia actually results from inhaling spores from the environment. And that often affects individuals who have weakened immune systems. So for persons who have a healthy immune system and can go about their day like normal and don't have any sort of underlying conditions, your immune system is actually very well equipped to handle these spores from the environment. So every day it's already fighting off any sort of these pathogens. But for somebody with a weakened immune system, they don't have a robust enough immune system to sort of fight off these pathogens that we would usually do on a normal daily basis. So this is why fungal pneumonia tends to affect persons with a weakened immune system. So persons who are on immunosuppressive therapy, or persons who are undergoing cancer treatment, or persons who have HIV or AIDS, their immune systems, unfortunately, are not as healthy or not as robust to handle these external factors. So sometimes they are going to contract these sorts of fungal pneumonia. And of course, when we're looking at aspiration pneumonia, that is going to occur when food or liquids or even vomit enters the lungs instead of the stomach. And that is going to lead to infection of the lungs because, of course, these substances are not supposed to be in your respiratory tract. So you can't catch aspiration pneumonia from someone else. But it is important for the persons who are at risk, for example, the stroke patients or the people with the swallowing disorders, they need to take precautions to prevent developing the aspiration pneumonia.
All right, folks, 12:32. Of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5 FM. Your questions coming up in a short while. What are some of the lifestyle factors or habits that increase the risk of pneumonia?
So we tend to think that pneumonia is very much a chest infection and that our lifestyle probably does not have a lot to do in terms of increasing our risk, but there are actually several lifestyle factors that significantly increase your chances of developing pneumonia. And of course, smoking is one of the biggest risk factors because it is going to damage the lung's natural defense mechanisms, and that makes it easier for these bacteria and for these viruses to infect your respiratory system. And of course, heavy alcohol consumption as well is going to weaken your immune system and increases your risk of developing aspiration pneumonia. And other high-risk behaviors that we need to look at would be things like poor oral hygiene. That is going to lead to bacterial infections spreading to the lungs. Even something as simple as a sedentary lifestyle, physical inactivity actually leads to weakened lung function and increases your risk of respiratory infections. And malnutrition, chronic stress, these things also weaken your immune system and makes it harder for your body to start to fight off these infections. So ensuring that you have, you know, your adequate sleep, your adequate stress reduction techniques, regular exercise, and of course, a balanced diet, and avoiding smoking and the excessive alcohol consumption is going to reduce your risk of pneumonia.
All right, folks, we're getting ready for some of your questions right after this. How is pneumonia treated, and does treatment differ depending on the cause?
So, yes, treatment for pneumonia is, of course, going to be dependent on not only the cause of pneumonia, but the severity and the overall health of the patient as well. Bacterial pneumonia is going to be treated with antibiotics, usually oral antibiotics for the mild cases, but for the severe cases, those persons are going to need intravenous antibiotics. Viral pneumonia, on the other hand, they do not respond to antibiotics. Instead, your treatment is going to focus on supportive care, rest, hydration, fever reduction, and of course, antiviral medications if needed. So certain medications that are used to treat influenza-like viruses. But of course, we know that viral infections can become superimposed with a bacterial infection, and it's only in those cases that antibiotics are required for a viral infection that has that a bacterial infection with it. Fungal pneumonia, on the other hand, is treated with what we call antifungal medications, and aspiration pneumonia may actually require antibiotics if an infection develops. Now, in all cases, oxygen therapy may be needed if that person's oxygen levels drop below a certain percentage. Now, hospitalization is going to be necessary for the persons who have severe cases, especially if we're looking at the high-risk groups like the elderly or the infants or those with underlying health conditions. And of course, it's important to note that early treatment is going to be crucial to prevent any sort of complications such as respiratory failure or even sepsis, which is basically a widespread infection of the body, and if left untreated, can lead to multi-organ failure and even death in very severe cases.
All right, let's get some questions coming in. 625-2257. Any topic, any medical question, 627-3223-306-1065. Let's get one on the WhatsApp here. So, good day, Doc. When I was little, a little girl, my grandmother was in the hospital. The nurse sent her in the shower. As soon as she woke up, she got pneumonia and she died. Could the cold shower cause death in this case?
So, again, in that case, we have to look at the entire picture. What was the reason she was in the hospital? Why was she hospitalized in the first place? Was her immune system compromised? And it could be that the reason the nurse told her to take a cold shower was because her fever was possibly very high, and they were trying to find ways to ensure that her fever goes down a little bit. So it's not necessarily that the cold shower itself would have caused her to develop that pneumonia. It could have been that just being in the hospital, she probably acquired pneumonia, and her immune system probably was not robust enough to fight off the infection. So it's not necessarily that she took the cold shower. We have to look at all the different factors that would have been involved. And one of the main factors would have been that her immune system probably was compromised.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, of course, 625-2257-6273-223, lunchtime, Doctor on Freedom 106.5 FM. Also feel free to message our other frequencies, you know, Sangeet 106.1 and Sky 99.5, and they will send your messages to us right here in studio. Good day, Doc. What causes cracked fingernails?
So there could be a number of different causes if we're looking at cracked fingernails. If you don't have any sort of other symptoms except the cracking itself, it could be that you probably squeezed your finger somewhere. But there are other causes that we look at. So something as simple as frequent water exposure. If you're repeatedly wetting or drying your nails, that can actually weaken them and dry them out and leading to cracking. Constantly putting harsh chemicals on the nails. So certain nail polish removers with things like acetone or even cleaning agents. Some people don't wear gloves when they're cleaning. Those things have harsh chemicals in it, and they can affect your nails as well. So trauma, injury, you know, even if somebody has nutritional deficiencies like iron deficiency, that can lead to brittle nails as well. If you have a biotin deficiency, low calcium and zinc, there are many different things that can lead to cracked fingernails. So it really is dependent on the person and what that person is experiencing or if they have any underlying conditions. If not, it could just be an external factor.
My question here. Good day, doctor. Do these vitamins that they sell really work?
It depends on the vitamins. So, I mean, things like multivitamins, they usually just, you know, they provide you with your daily dose of whatever you require. Sometimes it may have a lot more than what your body requires that day. So even if you look at the back of some of them, they'll say that they have 200% of your daily serving of whatever it is, whether it's B12 or biotin. And that can lead to some strange symptoms in some persons. So for some people, if they have an excess of B12, their urine is going to be like a mountain dew color. And it's not that you're not absorbing it. It's that there's just too much in your diet. And that's through the multivitamins. I mean, they do work for some people who do need that extra supplementation. So it really is dependent on the person. Things like vitamin C, it's not actually stored in the body. So you can't really basically store it up in your body every day. It's usually when you actually get that cold that it is very much beneficial. But yes, we do need vitamin C within our diet every day as well.
Take this call here. Hello, thank you for holding.
Good afternoon, Bass. And good afternoon, Doctor. Mm-hmm. I'm calling to find out about, you know, skin care. You buy your normal skin skincare cream, does it, if they have an expiry date on it, can it affect your skin?
Yes, there are certain chemicals that are in it that will, so in some cases, they probably will not work as effectively, but in other cases, especially if it is very much past the expiry date, then it can have an adverse effect on your skin, leading to irritation. And in some cases, some people might even develop an allergy towards it. So I wouldn't recommend, if there is an expiration date on it and it's way past the expiration date, that you put it on your skin.
What about foods, Doc? I mean, I know she mentioned the skin products. Sometimes you go to these beauty stores and you see, well, they, sometimes the only time in Trinidad when they have a sale is when things are about to expire. So sometimes there's some food stuff that may be about to expire. You know, is that safe to buy as well?
So, I mean, there's a best buy date, meaning that it is the date when the food should be consumed by. I've heard a lot of persons say that, you know, that's not the actual expiration date, but I always say that it's better to be safe than sorry. You know, you don't want to eat something that is a month past expiration. And first of all, it may not even taste like how it's supposed to taste. And secondly, it leads to some sort of food poisoning, because whatever preservatives was in it has actually caused an adverse effect on your body.
Got a final call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Jane. I did do some investigation recently, but today I just want to mention one, and that's my thyroid function test. The TSH was 0.107. The free T4 was 17.5, and the free T3 was 3.34. Now, I'm hypothyroid, and at present, I am on 100 micrograms. These seem sort of a worrying to me, from what I looked up a few to get some background here, information. I'm just wondering whether that dosage needs to be altered, because I felt extremely tired of late, and I'm anemic as well, but not excessively so. So I'm just wondering whether it's...
And you were going in and out. I don't know if you got all of that, Doctor.
So what I gathered, I didn't get the free T3, but I got the TSH and the T4. Now, in terms of the values that you told me, the TSH may be slightly low, normal to low, depending on the lab, and the free T4 may be normal to slightly high. Now, that could indicate subclinical or maybe an overt hyperthyroidism, or meaning that you can have an overactive thyroid. Now, I'm not saying that you are diagnosed with that, because I don't have all the values. I did not see the T3 value, but if you are experiencing things like weight loss, despite having a normal appetite, increased heart rate or palpitations, if you're having anxiety or irritability, or even excessive sweating, you need to go and see your doctor or even an endocrinologist. They may even perform the test again, or even do other tests to determine the cause. And if you are symptomatic, then they may need to treat you accordingly. Again, I did not hear all the values, so I'm not diagnosing you. I can't tell you that you have high blood, a hyperactive thyroid. But if you are experiencing symptoms, I would say to definitely consult your doctor or your endocrinologist as well.
All right. So let's take. I see Dosi, another call coming in. Let's take this final call. Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Calling from Pinal. Speaking of expiry dates, my wife went to the pharmacy to get some diabetes medication and other stuff. And in the bag, they put two vials in one little box of glucose test strips. The box and the bottle, the vials, did not say what machine it was for. And the expiry date was for the middle of April. So it wouldn't even work in my machine because the shape of the strip is different and so on. Mm-hmm. So looking at the expiry date and the fact that there was no brand mentioned, I just put it in the garbage. This is how I treat expiry dates. I want nothing to do with anything that is nearing an expiry date or have passed it. But this crazy thing here, there was not even a brand, and I don't know why they're giving this out at all. I want a comment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with the test strips, the expiry date, I guess, would be for the compounds that are within the strip that will tell you your reading. I'm not too versed in that, but I will say that it may still work. I just don't know how accurate the readings will be after the expiry date. So always opt to not use any sort of, you know, test strips after the expiry date.
All right, let's take our final break here from Amco Healthify, and we come back with our pneumonia questions.
Life moves fast, so healthify yourself every day, starting with naturally brand almond milk and all-inclusive cereal. Quick plant-based fuel for your morning. Healthify lunch with Bragg's apple cider vinegar, adding a splash of goodness to salads, and Bragg's liquid aminos for stir fries. Tetley and Caribbean Dreams range of teas help you relax, recharge, and healthify your afternoons. And after your workout, refuel with naturally brand almond milk and all-inclusive for a protein-packed recovery. Amco gives you so many ways to healthify your day with naturally brand almond milk, Bragg's apple cider vinegar, liquid aminos and refreshers, all-inclusive cereals, Tetley and Caribbean Dreams teas.
All right, thank you, Amco Healthify. All right, so 11 minutes away from 1 o'clock, let's get into our question. So when should someone with pneumonia seek medical attention instead of trying to recover at home?
Pneumonia can often be treated at home with rest and fluids and, of course, your prescribed medication. But there are certain warning signs that is going to indicate the need for immediate medical attention. So if you are experiencing a very high fever, so that would be about 38.9 degrees Celsius or higher, severe difficulty breathing, persistent chest pain, bluish lips or fingertips. And that is basically what we call cyanosis. And that means that you're not getting proper oxygen saturation throughout your body. Confusion or even a rapid heart rate, you need to seek emergency care immediately. And of course, individuals who have a weakened immune system, if you have chronic illnesses or even the elderly, you should not wait for your symptoms to worsen before seeking help. Babies and young children with pneumonia are going to show signs like rapid breathing or lethargy or difficulty in feeding or even grunting sounds. And all of these things need to warrant immediate medical evaluation. Yes, the mild symptoms in the otherwise healthy person can be treated at home. But once you start to experience these more severe symptoms, you need to seek medical attention.
And what are the possible complications of pneumonia, if left untreated?
So if pneumonia is not treated properly, it can lead to a plethora of different serious complications. And one of the most dangerous complications is sepsis. That is a life-threatening condition where that infection actually spreads into your bloodstream and potentially causes organ failure. Another major concern that we have with pneumonia is respiratory failure, and that's where the lungs cannot deliver enough oxygen to the body, and that is going to sometimes require mechanical ventilation in some persons. Other complications that we will see would be things like a pleural effusion, that's fluid buildup surrounding the lungs. or lung abscesses where you have pockets of pus within the lungs themselves, and even chronic lung damage. And all of these things can permanently affect somebody's breathing. Pneumonia is the leading, or one of the leading causes of hospitalization in the elderly. And in severe cases, it can definitely be fatal. And that's why we're always saying early diagnosis and proper treatment is going to be critical, especially for those high-risk patients.
And how can pneumonia be prevented? Are there vaccines available for it?
So pneumonia can often be very much prevented. And yes, vaccination is one of the most effective ways to do so. So we have the pneumococcal vaccines, which help to protect against Streptococcus pneumoniae, which again is the most common bacterial cause of pneumonia. And we would usually recommend this vaccine for infants and young children, adults over the age of 65, persons who have chronic conditions like asthma or diabetes or heart disease, and of course, immunocompromised individuals. The influenza vaccine also becomes very crucial because the flu infections can lead to those secondary pneumonia infections. And of course, the COVID-19 vaccine is going to help to prevent severe lung infections that can develop into pneumonia. And other preventative measures are going to include, you know, the regular things that we always see, regular hand washing, avoiding smoking, and of course, the excessive alcohol consumption, practicing good respiratory hygiene, so covering your cough and your sneezes when necessary, and of course, maintaining a strong immune system through leading a healthy lifestyle.
And can pneumonia have long-term effects on lung health, especially in people with pre-existing conditions like asthma or COPD?
So yes, unfortunately, pneumonia can actually have lasting effects on your lung health, especially on those persons that have the pre-existing conditions. So in persons with asthma or COPD, pneumonia can cause permanent lung damage, and that makes future infections more severe and increases their risk of chronic respiratory issues. Now, even in the healthy individual, recovering from severe pneumonia can take even weeks to months, and that person may have lingering symptoms, so fatigue or shortness of breath and a reduced lung capacity, and that means that your lungs are not able to take in as much air as it would prior to you becoming infected. And some patients even develop what we call pulmonary fibrosis, and that is a condition where your lung tissue itself becomes scarred, and that leads to long-term breathing difficulties. And this is why we always stress on preventative measures and early treatment, because they are going to minimize a person's developing these long-term complications.
And what advice do you have for caregivers or family members of someone with pneumonia?
So if you are caring for somebody with pneumonia, that is going to require close monitoring of that person and, of course, proper medication adherence and supportive care. So you need to ensure that the patient is taking all their prescribed medications, whether it be the antibiotics or the antivirals or the antifungals, on schedule as recommended, and make sure that they are getting plenty of rest to allow their body to fight off that infection, drinking enough fluids to prevent dehydration and to help loosen that mucus that may be in their lungs as well, and using a humidifier or even steam therapy to ease the breathing. Now, if the person starts to experience worsening symptoms or difficulty breathing or even confusion, then you need to seek medical attention immediately. And for the elderly patients and those who are suffering from chronic conditions, preventing future infections through vaccination and your lifestyle changes are going to become very much crucial, because the next time you develop an infection, it may be even more severe than the prior.
And finally, what are the biggest misconceptions about pneumonia that people should be aware of?
So here are some of the things that I would usually hear my patients say when it comes to pneumonia. So some people think that pneumonia is just a bad cold, but pneumonia is a severe or serious lung infection, and that can lead to hospitalization and even death if it is left untreated. Yes, it may start off with cold-like symptoms, but it becomes much more severe if it is left untreated. And many people seem to think that it's only the elderly population that develops pneumonia. Yes, older adults are at a higher risk, but anybody can develop pneumonia, including healthy young adults and children as well. And again, this is something that we hear very commonly. Antibiotics can treat every single pneumonia case. Antibiotics are only going to work for bacterial pneumonia. Viral pneumonia is going to require supportive care and sometimes antiviral medications. And, you know, a caller called in and asked if they had pneumonia once, if they can get it again. And many people believe that they can't get it again. But the reality is, having pneumonia does not make you immune. Different bacteria and viruses can cause recurrent infections, especially in persons with weakened immune systems. And, of course, people think pneumonia is not preventable, but vaccination, hand hygiene, quitting smoking, and maintaining a strong immune system can significantly reduce your risk of developing pneumonia. It's not going to 100% prevent you from getting it, but it's reducing your risk of developing it. And even if you do develop it, these things are going to reduce the severity of the pneumonia that you will develop.
All right, Doc, so thank you very much again for a great informative topic.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.